interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a full-time job, but on the side, he's been buying really cheap, low-end properties and renting them to lower-income people. It's been really profitable for him. He's found a really great niche. So on the show today, I want to talk to him. I want to hear his story. I want to hear the good and the bad with low-income properties. But first, let's take a real quick break. We'll get a word in from our sponsor. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet JC Freeman from Birmingham, Alabama.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
Hey, JC, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it very much. It's I love the podcast, and it's an honor to be a part of it.
Awesome. Oh, sure. Yeah, glad to have you here. So why don't you tell us what got you first interested in buying rental properties?
Yeah, so I would say just really starting at a young age, I was very interested in investing in the stock market. I remember I used to watch Jim Cramer's Mad Money, if you've seen that show.
Sure.
With my grandfather. And my grandfather was a successful investor. And so kind of at a young age, it just really piqued my interest. As I grew up, I went to college. And once I graduated from college, I have a father who is, fortunate enough that he's very supportive of me. And we basically went in on a condo together, and he gave me the opportunity to build some equity in a real estate asset. And that was my first exposure to real estate investing.
You were living in that condo and then you rented out some rooms, right?
Correct. Yeah. It was a 3-bedroom, 3-bath condo. And, I paid my dad for one of those rooms and then I rented out the other 2 rooms to my buddies. Yeah.
Awesome. And were you able to cover the mortgage with the rent money that was coming in?
Yes. Yes, we were.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And then at some point you decided to take this to another level and you wanted to buy properties that you weren't going to live in, that you were going to actually rent out. When did that happen? When did you become, an actual investor?
Yeah. So that was the condo was pretty informal. And so I would say about 1.5 to 2 years after that experience, I was kind of hooked. I realized it was, a good way of going about things. And I started, I had some extra cash and I started to, or capital, and I started to look at other condos around Birmingham, Alabama. And fortunately enough, about that same time, I caught up with a friend named Scott Ludicky, and big shout out to Scott because he's been a great mentor for me and I couldn't have done this without him. But he basically, called me out and said, look, why are you looking at condos that the HOA fees are just going to completely eat up your profit. Sure. As far as cash flow?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, that's a great idea. What do you have in mind? And Scott had gotten into the low income, single family homes, rentals, and he had been doing that for a few years and he had done a pretty good job with it. He's successful with it. And met up with him one afternoon. We hopped in the car and started riding around and talked more about it. And it just made sense to me. So that was kind of that.
Why low income? Like what was there more profit in that than there would be in other types of properties?
Yeah. I mean, a big part of it was just being familiar with that because Scott was such a good friend of mine. But once I learned more and more about it, what really made it attractive to me was the cash flow.
Okay.
So that really became my primary focus.
So you're not buying, when you're looking to buy a property, you're not really banking on that property appreciating, you really are looking at the cash flow, that you wanted to generate actual money that you're putting in your pocket every month.
Yeah, right. I mean, appreciation would be nice, but again, I look at it as icing on the cake. Even if appreciation is going to take place, I mean, it's really, when I look at the numbers, I'm strictly looking at cash flow.
I love hearing that, because so many investors, I think maybe not people that listen to this show, I think a lot of our listeners love cash flow, but when I do talk to a lot of people that are looking to get started, they seem to want to buy property for appreciation. And
right.
I kind of think of that as gambling. Like you can't control that. You don't know what the market's going to do. But when you're buying for cash flow, you're actually putting money in your pocket every month. So I think you're really on the right track with that.
Right. Thank you.
Now something that that people will say is that with low income properties, those tenants are a lot more hands on. That they need a lot more babysitting than maybe properties that are in more upscale neighborhoods. Is that true? Are you having to do a lot of handholding with your tenants?
I mean, at first, definitely. But over time, I think what becomes really important is creating your system and then really training your tenants and educating them and just setting their expectations. And so okay. I think if your system's strong and you do a good job of educating them and you're upfront with them and you give them the guidelines and all that, that can really set you up for less headaches in the future.
So, what kind of stuff are you telling them to do? Like what kind of systems do you have in place?
Well, you know, I like to do an initial welcome package. And, you know, basically what the package goes over is just who's responsible for what. And, you know, when certain repairs are needed, is the tenant responsible for that? Are you responsible mm-hmm. for that? That's something we're responsible for.
Okay.
So we just really try to label everything under the sun. So when that issue does arise, it's not there's not much negotiating.
Yeah.
Do
you find it's kind of an ongoing process? Because a lot of times you give a tenant something like that, and you know it's just paperwork to them. In my experience, that they're not really studying it. Like, so do you find it's kind of an ongoing process to educate them on what's their responsibility and what's yours?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a big part of it's communication, but I like to do is I'll actually sit down with them and go through it. I mean, it's not just a stack of papers.
Okay, good.
I expect them to read it on their own. I mean, I'll tell them, look, you know, our kind of initial walkthrough, and just kind of the introductory package and all that. That's going to take about 2 hours. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, make sure you set aside 2 hours for this, and we're going to get on the same page.
You know, that's good. So you've really set the expectation up front, explained to them what their responsibilities are, and then I guess you're finding that's making things easier for you then as the tenant's in place, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's a much better way to do it than I used to do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, tell me about these houses. So are these older houses, newer houses? Are they big? Are they small? Like, what are they like?
So most of them are older houses. What I particularly look for, or at least what I've had experience with in the past, is 3 bedrooms and then 1 bath homes. So single family homes, yeah.
Is there a certain square footage or a certain size that you look for that you think is like the perfect property to have?
Not necessarily. You obviously don't want something that's too small, but I wouldn't say I have an exact number in mind.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say that if I run into a good you know, two bedroom, one bath property that I would automatically say no. It just, again, right. It really depends on the numbers.
All right. So let's get into this. So let's talk about maybe one of your most recent deals. Can you tell me what you paid for the property and what it's rented out for?
Yes. So this is actually a property that I'm in the process of purchasing right now. And after the initial repairs and everything, I'll probably end up closing on the property with about $18,000 into it.
Okay. And what are you paying for the property?
Well, that will be, the purchase price is $17,000.
So okay. So it needs about $1,000 to fix it up?
Well, no. I mean, the purchase price would actually be about $12,000 to $13,000.
Okay.
12.5, and then after the repairs, we'd end up at about $17,000, and then closing cost.
Okay.
Not a mistake. So overall, while I'm in, I would be in $18,000 on
now,
the purchase.
I know a lot of our listeners are probably freaking out that is an incredibly cheap price to pay for a house. That is really incredible. Does Birmingham have a lot of deals like that, or is that just kind of a once in a lifetime deal that you found?
I wouldn't say it's a once in a lifetime deal, but it's a good deal. Okay. So if you spend time, you know, the time and put in the legwork to, you know, do your research and you're patient and you're really looking for deals like this, I think there are plenty of them out. Yeah.
And so what do you think, or what are you hoping to rent that property out for?
I would be happy renting that property out for really anything $595 or above.
$595. Okay. Now let's talk about the expenses. So you're going to have to pay your taxes and insurance. Those are kind of your set expenses. So how much are the taxes?
So the property tax on this property will be $613
a year. Okay.
Yeah.
And then
insurance is going to be $625.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So the other expense, I guess, is repairs. And that's something that it's not a set amount and it's not going to happen every month, but from time to time, things are going to break.
Correct.
Now, with your other properties, do you find that you're spending a certain amount per year?
When I'm looking at purchasing a property and taking all the costs into account, I would probably devote about around $1,500 a year.
Okay.
Just for possible repairs, and I wouldn't expect that I spend that every year. And also, you know, any opportunity I get, I try to put, you know, sweat equity into the property. So, sometimes I'll get very hands on to save myself some money.
Right. So. Okay. And are you managing the property yourself, or do you have a property manager?
I started off with a property manager, and now I self-manage, yeah.
Okay. So now, after everything is all said and done, you've got your property taxes, your insurance, the repair budget. There shouldn't really be anything else, right? That's kind of...
Vacancy loss,
that's right.
There you go.
So,
yep.
And now, most people would have financing, but you like to buy properties with cash, right?
I do, yeah. I have been just my personality. I'm scared to death of debt. So I know there are pros and cons to leveraging properties and whatnot. But for my personality, when I started off, you know, I kind of looked at this as just strictly a learning experience, and I wanted that experience to be completely stress free. Well,
yeah.
It's never completely stress free,
right?
But as stress free as possible, and so. I really stay away from, you know, I try to stick to cash. I've been fortunate enough to do that. And it's worked well with these types of properties because, you know, to purchase the property, you're not talking, you know, significant amounts
right,
of money.
Right. And most of the properties that you bought, are they all kind of in the same price range around 17,000?
No, I would say if you're looking at like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, at least personally, you know, if you can get something for around 30,000,
okay.
You're looking, you know, at a pretty good deal. So like turnkey, if I ran into a turnkey opportunity where I could purchase a property with a tenant already in there, and let's say they're paying around $650 to $750 a month, 30,000 would end up being a good deal. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So would you say that you're targeting to make somewhere around $300 a month for each property? Is that kind of, and I know the expenses aren't set every month, and you know, especially with repairs, I know for me, I tend to get hit with a lot of repair issues back to back. Like they all hit at once, you know, for a year, right. You won't have anything, and then everything will hit it at once. But do you find you're making about $300 a month profit?
Yeah, you know, and a little less.
Okay.
A little more, just depending on the property. Okay. But yeah, I mean, that's, you're around that $3,000 mark annually for net operating income. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. You know what I love is we were talking the other day, and you were telling me that you look at your rental income as hours that you don't need to work at your regular job. Yeah. And I love that.
It's a curse. It's a curse. I don't, I mean, I've been doing it ever since, and I hate that I do it like that, but obviously it makes sense to me. And, you know, I teach tennis as my full-time job, and I love it, and I'll do it forever, but, or as long as, you know, my body can handle it. Right.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, if I rent a house for $600 a month, and my lesson rate is $64 an hour, I mean, that's an extra 10 hours of lessons for that month. I mean, and that right. 10 hours may not sound like much, but in my mind, that's a lot.
Right. So where do you plan to go from here? Do you want to keep buying more properties and growing your portfolio?
Absolutely. I definitely do. I have a 25-year goal, and it's, you know, kind of embarrassing to share this maybe, but I'd like to get to 100 houses in 25 years.
Awesome. And do you want to pay cash for them all, or would you consider using leverage at some point?
I would definitely consider using leverage at some point. Probably getting 100 houses in 25 years without some leverage may be a little unrealistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, the way I look at it is if it's something that I become comfortable doing, I'll do it. But in 25 years, if I am nowhere close to 100 houses, and let's say I only have 50, you know, half of that.
Right.
That's, I'm still in my mind doing pretty well. Yeah. I'm better than where I started from. Right.
Right. Right. You know, one philosophy that I just love that Andrew Holmes said a few weeks ago in episode 106 is he was talking about how everybody in America should really have 5 properties that they own free and clear. Cause that's not going to make you rich, but it's going to really secure your future. And so I think as you keep growing and you get to those 5 properties, that's going to really give you a good base. And then, you know, as you keep adding more portfolios, I mean, maybe more properties to your portfolio, you can maybe, you know, cut back some hours that you're working, and you get to enjoy life more. So I think that's great. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, JC, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you telling your story. And
yeah, man, thanks for having me. It was a blast. And yeah, again, I thoroughly enjoy your podcast, and it's helped me out a lot.
So. Awesome. I am glad to hear that. Well, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with the new episode next Tuesday. If you like the show and you want to support us, the best thing you can do is leave us a rating and review. That really does help us a lot. And I thank you in advance. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.